Good morning, everyone. We're going to get started with Agency 5, Wyoming Department of Education callback, and we have Superintendent Hill with us and Mr. Hansen. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair, or Madam Chair and Mr. Co-Chair, and members of the Joint Appropriations Committee. We appreciate our opportunity to be back with you. I'll provide a very brief introduction, as I know you have many things to accomplish today, before we present our findings. When I see the opportunity to improve the Wyoming education system, I'm going to pursue it. And I'm thankful that you've joined me in that objective by providing adequate funding on many tasks. First, I'm reminded of my statutory duties. These include the general supervision of public schools, Wyoming Statute 21-2-201, and the developing of a complete system of education for Wyoming's children, again, Wyoming Statute 21-2-202. Much of our presentation today will be centered on the teacher-to-teacher initiative. By the end of our time together, I hope that you'll see that this particular initiative is a method of completing work assigned by the legislature for professional development of educators and improving the quality and usefulness of our assessment tools. These are two initiatives already embedded in our budgets, and you'll see that the analysis as we move forward in our presentation. However, I also welcome this committee's invitation to create an instructional excellence budgetary account, and we've done so. I want to thank you for your committee's questions from our first session, those questions and others that have come forward during my first year have enabled us to learn more of the state, of the department, and how we can collaborate with ANI, LSO, and the legislature on various questions. We welcome your questions during our presentation, and with that in mind, I present Fred Hansen, who will start our presentation this morning.
Thank you, Superintendent Hill. Mr. Hansen?
Thank you, Madam Chair. In your packet labeled 189, I have a memo to the two co-chairs about the items that we thought were covered in our original presentation, and then one last request for you, in item number 10. So I'll start off with number one. Number one is we're asking that the committee consider a footnote in the budget bill directing the department to deposit $7.2 million from deferred revenue from the E-rate funds into the common school land income account. And that was in our handout, I believe it was 141. So this is just a reminder for the committee. If there's any questions on that, I'll move on to the next item. Number two, we were asked to analyze the ET, provide information on the ETS contract and analyze the impact to budget 4601 and agency 205. And in your packet, on what we've labeled as page two, this document, we have those numbers for you. And if, with your permission, Madam Chair, I will go over the numbers. The bid from ETS came in at $10,890,000. There are ongoing negotiations with ETS, and there's really three unknowns in building this budget. The first unknown is the cost of the changes. From the proposed accountability bill, there's about five items in that bill that would affect this contract. Changing the added the standard setting, the constructive response, writing for trend, accelerate the writing pilot, and science test at four more grades. Just a rough ballpark what we think the number could be with those, could be bringing it up to $14.750 million. The second unknown is what about other bills, changes to this bills, factors that would affect this contract. So I would ask the co-chairs, what is the committee's pleasure on this? When we when we have a bill that affects this contract, do you want us to give a physical note for the bill, for an appropriation within the bill, or do you want us to simply say, here's the cost of it, and we will include it, we will report this to the JAC and include it in our budget bill?
I guess the first question is, Brad, with respect to the federal funds placeholder, is that a constant amount? It won't change?
Mr. Hanson.
Madam Chair, that's the third unknown. The feds can pay for certain items in the contract, the development, other items in the contract. And so what we would have to do is, once the contract is finalized, then we can ask ETS to give us those items, break out the contract per the items the feds can pay for. So, no, it's not constant. It's our rough placeholder right now of what we think the feds could pay in the ballpark.
Well, at the end, what you have to do is you propose the budget that you think that covers that item, but our expectation is that you would first spend down the general fund for that specific purpose, then spend down state funds, and then any funds not appropriated would revert.
All right. Madam Chair, again, if the feds allow us to do the development, we're allowed to bill them for the development, so to speak. We can use their grant for the development. Then that would be the first thing. We'd be paying for the development. But if there's an item in the billing that is not theirs, then we would pay for it out of the school foundation appropriation. So, again, the question is, it varies from session to session. How do you want us to proceed on proposed changes to the contract? Do you want us to just keep it in the appropriation, then you'll get it as the bill comes through? Or do you want us to report back to you for the budget amount?
Now, Chairman, I don't think it does change. I think it's you ask for an appropriation to cover the obligation, and you spend so much of it as you need to do that. The dollars revert. If you need more money, you ask for an exception budget.
Madam Chair, I'm talking about during the session. If there's bills during the session that affect this contract, and so we'll play it by ear then.
Well, I think, Mr. Hanson, if there are bills that affect this during the session, there would be a fiscal note with those bills, and they would run through both the House and the Senate, and we would have to make that adjustment.
It would be an appropriation in the bill then.
Right.
Okay.
Thank you. Senator Meyer, did you have a question? Okay. Good. Committee, other questions on this contract?
Well,
Senator
Madam Chairman, I need to go back just if it's to number one, the footnote in the budget. Is this an appropriate time to?
Sure.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Thank you. And I'm sorry if I missed the explanation or if I missed it the other day. I don't understand the relationship between the handout and what they're trying to do here, and I was wondering if I could get an explanation.
Okay, so
I'm a little at a loss.
Senator Hastert, it's Monday morning, and we can review this. It's important.
Right.
Do you have that handout 141 from? Okay. Does Mr. Hanson have it?
Or you can. Madam Chair, the handout 141 was a packet, and in that packet was a letter from the superintendent to the committee with the details of the request in it. I believe it was dated January the 13th.
Just give us 1 second.
Perhaps I have the wrong number on it.
Well,
that's 141.
That's all 141 is. It's just one piece of paper that talks about vacant positions.
Can we talk then 140?
Can
I put another
totally at a loss of what we're doing here.
For 140?
Madam Chair,
Matt,
I have it. 139 is the last page on 139.
Last page on 139.
Right. last page on 139.
Well, I have 140. Okay. So 139 has the front page that looks, it has the budget with red print on it, too. So it shows the standards, the exceptions, and then the governor's recs. Are we ready to go with an explanation? Yeah, that's the one there right there, Phil. The last page on that one. Keep going. No, to your right. Here, that next, where you got your hand. Yeah. Go ahead.
Madam Chair, Senator Hester, the request a week ago Friday was to move the original allocation to deferred revenue of $7.2 million in E-rate funds that we'd received over several years and to move that into the corpus of the school foundation account to for future earnings for that account. It leaves a balance. We accumulated $11,335,000 as of January the 4th, and this would leave $4 million roughly in deferred revenue for the governor to allocate from deferred revenue for expenses related to the WIN. All right, Madam Chair, back to the explanation under item two. So it's still unknown what all the numbers are going to be for the assessment budget in Agency 205. We're suggesting these placeholders, and if the numbers change because of a bill, then we'll have an appropriation in the bill. And if something's to change, we'll be back and let the committee know.
Okay. Other questions on the ETS contract? Senator Meyer.
Yeah, Fred, I just want to figure out the numbers. It's $7,228,000. That's what you're moving over. But that fund has a balance of $11,335,000. What happens to the remaining $4 million?
Madam Chair, Senator Meyer, it would stay in deferred revenue, and any additional funds that come in would also go to deferred revenue, and then the governor then could allocate the funds for paying contracts related to the WIN, expenses, hardware related to the WIN.
Okay, so, Madam Chairman, the governor has access to the $11,335,000, and through the B-11 process now, and you're going to take $7,228,000, move that into another account, and then who has access to that then? Where does that go?
Madam Chair, Senator Meyer, that would go to the treasurer.
That goes
for investment in the corpus.
For investment in the corpus. Okay. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Sure. All right. I think we got one taken care of, and
now we're on item three.
We're on three.
Again, on a number, just to make sure the committee understands, on number two, we're asking that our budget be reduced by $6,355,000. So you can lower that budget. On number three, we're asking for another reduction. There's a typo in it now, I see. So this is the elimination of position 120 in unit 6128 with a reduction to the 100 series of $141,222. And this was per the B11 that we had in our handout, number 139, not 141. So this was a B11. This was a position that we've sent over to the OCIO within the last week or two. And so they're going to keep it, so we'll take it off of our budget in the biennium that you're working right now. Madam Chair, items 4, 5, 6, and 7 relate to the analysis prepared by LSO that was handed out at our last meeting. And in that analysis, LSO came up with a total reduction to the department of $421,641. Unfortunately, LSO and A&I were tied up here in this room all last week, and finally on Friday we were able to meet with A&I, and they did a fantastic job of going through the analysis and explaining it to us. And so we accept that number of 421,641 as a reduction. There was one difference that we came up with. LSO had a reduction to school foundation funds of $295,725. And in the course of this biennium, with positions being moved, we ended up with two positions in two general fund budgets that were funded by school foundation. And so 4, 5, 6, and 7 change the number to be adjusted by school foundation. It changes LSO's number on general fund. Other than that, the numbers all agree, and we're laying out for your staff and for A&I which numbers should be adjusted on your budget pages.
Committee, do you want to go through any of these?
Okay. All right.
Thank you.
Then, 8 on the second page is a request again for the committee to consider our three exception requests on in unit 4603, and I've divided the three exception requests into four exception requests because the first one is Native American education at $130,000, school safety, which includes character education and anti-bullying, for $200,000, and then I've added WETIP $50,000 because, for your reminder, the governor actually approved this one. This was part of school safety, and the governor approved $50,000 of the $200,000. We're asking that the committee consider the $200,000 exception request, and the principal academy for $220,000. If there's any questions on that, Madam Chair?
Did you expand, Mr. Hansen, on the principal academy criteria in here?
Be happy to. May I ask Sean Moore to speak on that, Madam Chair?
Good morning, Mr. Moore.
Good morning, committee members. Sean Moore, Directors of Standards, Learning, and Assessment for the Department of Education. I put together a one page. I'll get this to you electronically after I'm finished with this. Madam Chair, the Principal Leadership Program for the State of Wyoming supports strong leadership for world-class schools. The purpose of this program is to train and retain the most qualified principals in our schools and advance their leadership acumen. The Wyoming Leadership Program addresses the need to provide an induction program for principals in their first 3 years of practice. This program is designated to provide support for proteges to facilitate meetings, school visitations, as well as promote professional dialogue about best practices. Areas of support in the principal program improving teaching and learning, creating professional learning communities, building collaborative school cultures, analyzing and using multiple assessment data sources to inform instructional decisions, creating and refining school improvement plans, developing conflict resolution and problem-solving strategies, understanding and utilizing current research, and administrative collegiality. So that's kind of the purpose of the program. If you folks have any questions on those, I'll take those now.
That's good. And did you have a breakdown on how you came to your cost of $220,000?
Kristen, did you do a breakdown of the budget? We do, Madam Chair. We have a budget, and I'll get that to you.
Great. Mm-hmm. Other questions of Mr. Moore? Okay, thank you. Go ahead.
In Agency 205, Unit 4702, and those three requests are for a unified computing system of $960,000, additional funds for the PTBS and licensing system teacher certification of $1,128,000, and support and maintenance of the Wise Data System for $1,015,000. Any questions on this item from the committee?
Matt?
Madam Chair, you asked us to follow up with OCIO on this, and we kind of have a mirroring Section 300 drafted for this committee. Based upon review from OCIO, priority number one is dependent upon priority number two. We have priority number two, the teacher credentialing system, in the draft Section 300 to be funded through OCIO's office. So the $960,000 in priority one would then be reduced to $375,000, and that would also be contained in the Section 300.
Okay.
On priority number three, the $1,015,000, based upon the timing, OCIO recommends only $500,000 for this biennium, and then next biennium, the 15-16, the department would need another $500,000. So to summarize this, these three exception requests, number one and number two would be funded in the Section 300, and then number three could be funded through this budget at a reduced amount of $500,000.
Okay, less the $500.
Madam Chair.
Senator Von Plater.
Thank you. So, and I guess this is directed as much at Matt as anybody, is this, when you look at the governor's recommendation at the bottom of his, the third line of that, he said, is my intent to profile funding to address these issues. Is this what you're addressing?
Matt?
Madam Chair, that's correct. The governor did profile $3 million in his fiscal profile in his budget, and then this Section 300 will be about that amount. To address these various needs.
Does that work for you, Mr. Hansen?
I believe that's a good start.
Good.
Drew, do you want to address that? Or? I only have one comment. Madam Chairman.
Okay.
Drew Dilley.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Drew Dilley, Director for Information Management Division, Department of Education. Just some general comments, I guess, just to follow up. I wanted to be clear that this is your data system we're talking about, not mine. I guess ultimately it's the state's, but just want to make sure that the things that you are asking for, the things that the districts are asking for, are addressed. So there. In my mind, there's a difference between what has been profiled and the system that we have and been running for the past 6 years, and it's just a system that needs to be updated and addressed. So while I appreciate it, and it sounds good that we're working together on this, I want to make sure that there are aspects of this that reside within WDE, the contracts with the vendors with the WDE, and just want to make sure that that distinction is drawn. And I'd be happy to answer any questions. I love talking about it. So if there are any questions about it, I'd love to field them.
Go ahead, Senator Meyer.
That distinction that you're talking about, have any variance in dollars between what the governor's recommending and what you're recommending? Because, or are you recommending that we have both the governor's budget and your budget?
Madam Chair, Senator Meyer, it's hard for me to speculate what's intended with the governor's budget. However, his comments do revolve around a state longitudinal data system, which is a great endeavor. There are our data reporting system, WISE data reporting system, has flavors of that and can support that. But it seems to me, in my mind, he's talking about a true SLDS, and we're talking about what is required for the districts and the data collection needs. So in that vein, yes, there's a difference, and yes, I suspect that there would be a financial difference, although I can't speak educated on what those differences might be today.
Well, Madam Chairman, I suggest somebody educates appropriation as to what we're supposed to, what we're actually being requested to be appropriated, whether it's the governor's office or your office, or maybe you guys get together and tell us who's on first and what's the name of the guy on second.
Go ahead, okay. If you'd like to respond.
Madam Chair, Senator Meyer, when we were here a couple weeks ago, I think Senator Nicholas said, well, if you disagree with the governor, what he's doing with it, then this is your process to say you disagree. And I'm not going to openly disagree with it, but I think there are aspects that we have failed to communicate in the business cases that went to the governor originally. And that is the uniqueness to the system we already have in place. It's not development of a new system. I'm happy to work with them. Like I say, I love talking about it. So if I get an audience with whoever, I would take that opportunity.
Okay. Well, we'll ask you to review the Section 300 language with LSO and the OCIO, and we'll be working that up, in the next day or so.
Thank you.
Okay? Thank you. But Representative Edmonds.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Actually, I think you just said what I was going to discuss, so thank you.
Okay, good. All right.
Okay.
Thank you, Drew.
Madam Chair, the last item on this memo to you is a request that you direct ANI to recalculate the amounts to be under consideration for our 2%, 5%, and 8%. So,
good.
Because of all the changes, 1 through 7, 8. That concludes my memo.
All right. But any other questions of Mr. Hansen in regard to the memo? All right, so we have several other pages here of information that we might like to go through.
Madam Chairman, John Masters.
Yes, Mr. Masters.
We have several other items, and we had other people in mind to visit with you about those.
Sure.
The first will be Christine Steele, who would like to visit with you about the federal budgetary items.
So. Very good. Thank you. Good morning, Christine.
Good morning, Madam Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, and members of the committee. I'm Christine Steele, and I'm one of the two instructional leaders for the Department of Education, and I work with the operations of the agency. In your packet, page 3, one of the things that you had asked about for us to bring back additional information was how we forecast or help our districts understand the changing levels of federal funding. And so this table was prepared to give you an idea of the last couple of years of some of the federal programs and the projection for the 2012 year. And each of the programs have the budget number down this side, but the first two I'll just kind of go over if that's your pleasure. Title I in the appropriate estimate is changed by about 44,000, so there's a 0.1% or so difference in our state. These are state allocations. And then the two shaded items, the Striving Reader, is funded out. It was no longer funded after 2010. And the Turnaround School Improvement Grant is additional school improvement grant money that would have needed to have been spent in less than 2 years. And we currently have two cohorts working with the school improvement grants. We just awarded the second cohort, so we have not applied for that additional funding. The Even Start has been zeroed out over the past 2 years. There's no more funding for Even Start, which is a family literacy program. However, the state allocates some funding for that, and it's administrated through the Wyoming Community College Commission. The, as you can see, the migrant program and the neglected and delinquent programs are increased by about 0.2%. These are very small increases to the state of Wyoming. Then we have the effective teacher and leader one, which we normally call Title II, but in the new conversations at the national level, and we've been looking at effectiveness of teachers. And so in the appropriations, Title IIA is changing a name, so it's zeroed out as Title IIA and then refunded as Effective Teachers and Leader State Grants, which most of the districts and you might know as Title IIA then. The Math Science Partnership is a subpart of Title IIA, and right now we have no reauthorization on that, but this is estimates and we're still in preliminary figures from the U.S. Department of Ed. The Education Technology State Grants have been no longer funded as after 2010. The 21st Century Learning Community Centers, we do not have any authorization yet on that program. We're not sure. That means we have to have additional information. The Assessing Achievement, a State Assessment Grant, is $3.4 million. It's, as you can see, it's just about the same. It's been flat funded, or actually it's up just a slight amount from 2011. The next three you see in shade are rural education grants, and these go directly to the districts. They are not flow-through from the state agency. And this is a program you'll find in Title VI of No Child Left Behind. It has three parts, and it's about improving the ability and flexibility of rural districts, rural LEAs. And in Wyoming, we do have a couple of districts that do receive some funding through this, but it goes directly to the districts. There's a very complex formula about why districts qualify and why they don't. It's about how far they are from a particular population center. And there's NCES, which is the National Center for Education Statistics, determines this by formula. And then the next one you see is the English Language Learner Grant, which we normally call Title III. This is an example where Wyoming is called a minimally funded state. And that means that because of our small numbers, the formula would sometimes disadvantage states with small populations. And so there is a floor level of 500,000 that has continually been allocated to our state. And then we have a homeless children and youth education grant that is also funded through our state. And that one, as you can see, is pretty much flat funded throughout the 3 years or so, up and down a little bit. We get, I would take questions now, and then I can continue how this is done.
Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I noticed that Even Start shows up on your budget. Can you tell me where Head Start shows up in the governor's discussion about the fate of Even Start? He mentions Head Start, and I see that it's not even in your budget.
Madam Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Wallace, the Head Start budget is with the Department of Health, and the we do work with in a partnership with the Department of Health and Department of Family Services on early literacy initiatives. We work with some of the education and the professional development with that agency, and so we have a working relationship, but the funding comes through other agencies other than ours.
Representative Harshman.
Madam Chair, thank you. So if I heard you right, then all the federal funds that are expiring, it's just that the program's going away. It's not that we as a department or state have chosen not to apply.
Madam Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Harshman, the programs that have the end in them, you're correct. They are going away if it says end. Madam Chair, may I continue, Mr. Co-Chair? One of the things that you asked about last time was how we help our districts understand the difference in the level of funding. And this, the kind of a brief overview of how that occurs is the U.S. Department of Ed sends preliminary figures to each of the states, usually in late February or early March. The preliminary figures are not finalized. During that period of time, we work with our school districts on what's called the planning period for their consolidated grant application. That's a combined application that they fill out for several of their federal programs through a web-based system that we have called the Grants Management System. During that period of time, we have a planning tool that we work with them on their goals and their data, and they have their preliminary figures, so we enter those into the Grants Management System, and they work with those. We then, through the summer, in July, we get the first, some of the grants are split funded, so you might get a first letter in July and the second letter, grant award letter, in October. So we continue to work with them in the summer, and then we finalize their figures after we get our last award letter in October. So we plan through the summer, and we have training sessions in the spring in which we go over preliminary figures so districts can plan and have as much heads up as possible.
Representative Edmonds.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Christine, I think I understand it. All the N's mean end. Congress or Department of Ed have said we're done. It's over. The NRs, I assume that, so you said no reauthorization. Does that mean they're still kind of nebulous? We don't know what Congress is going to do. We're just waiting to hear.
Madam Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, and Representative Edmonds, you are correct. We need additional further information. The other thing that you asked, Madam Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, the other thing that you asked about was what is Title VI, what we normally call the federal assessment money. And I'll just give you a brief overview of Title VI. It has more than one use. Title VI is meant for the federal part of the state assessment systems. And by that, some states may need this money to continue developing their tests. Some states that have their tests developed can use this money to administer and to carry out other activities described in this subpart 6. Some of those might include developing content standards, refining them, revising content standards, improving English language learning assessments, ensuring continual validity and reliability of our assessment. Our TAC, our Technical Advisory Committee, is a federal requirement, so we use the federal funds for the Technical Advisory Committee. Some of the requirements of No Child Left Behind, such as specific types of reporting, we use the federal funds for those. So there are dedicated uses of Title VI, along with funding our staff that work with the state assessment. However, as Mr. Hansen said, we don't know at this time until the contract is finished which of those items we can determine would be appropriate for the federal funding.
And that's for the $3 million, up to $3 million.
Madam Chair, you are correct.
Other questions on Title VI? Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Christina, is there any other federal programs out there that we're not aware of, that we're not taking advantage of, that might help different agencies? For example, we had the military department in here. Of course, they got their Youth Challenge program. We did discuss the Starbase program. We did want to have some more opportunities for children in other parts of the state to be able to take part in the Starbase program. So is there a way that we can work with the federal government, the military department, the Department of Ed to try and get more kids into those programs?
Madam Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Esquivel, yes, we can. I would welcome the opportunity to continue providing information on any additional opportunities. The one that comes to mind might be consortium. Sometimes we enter into consortia with other states because, such as for enhanced assessment or other types of consortia. We've done that in the past for migrant programs. So certainly there is information I can provide at a later date and get back to the committee on if there are competitive types of grants.
All right. Continue.
Madam Chairman.
Mr. Masters.
At this point in time, we'd like to visit with you about our analysis of the Pearson contract.
Sure.
And Mr. Hansen and Mr. Hansen, Greg and Fred, not unrelated, will join me at the table for that. I shouldn't say they're unrelated. They don't claim each other.
Somewhere long ago,
probably.
They were part of a family.
Well,
all right.
Maybe I'll start.
Go ahead.
This follows from a conversation with your co-chair last summer where he asked about the Pearson settlement money. And the superintendent at that time asked the CFO and Mr. Hansen, Greg Hansen, if they would follow that trail. And along that trail, they also involved Mr. Wilmarth. And I think we have a pretty good idea of what happened there. And I would invite Greg Hansen to visit with you about that.
Good. All right. Good morning, Greg.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Greg Hansen, Department of Ed, County and Section. If you look in your packet that we handed out this morning, you have page 4. This was another way to look at how the Pearson contract was funded. And the two appropriations that covered that contract period, because it was a 4-year contract that covered 3 bienniums. What I'm trying to show in the first table is the amount of funds in the 09 biennium that went to the Harcourt. That's $11 million. And then the amount of that $18 million that went to Pearson, which is the $6 million. So if you go on to the 2011 biennium, you'll see that we have spent to date $9 million of that $18 million, and then we have the remainder of it dedicated to the Pearson contract. So when we got the charge to do this analysis, we realized quickly that the 09 biennium funds were used to pay, if you will, an obligation, Harcourt, of a prior biennium, because the two contracts overlapped, and that wasn't clear that appropriation was going to be spent on two assessment contracts. So that's why we were starting off behind the eight ball, if you will, on the pause contract on the appropriations. So if you go to that second table, it shows the contract amount after settlement, the $30 million, and then you'll see the amount that was available for Pearson out of those appropriations, the 09 and the 11. You've got $24 million there, so we had to find $6 million in federal funds to finish off that Pearson contract. Okay. And the numbers in these two tables should correspond nicely to the table I handed out last Friday with the colored lines and
I want to find that
the timeline.
Find okay. that timeline. If you just give me a minute here, I can't remember if we had it in that original 139 packet or if it was in 139. Okay, hold on. I'm not finding it there, but. No, here it is. It's actually 142 handout. And it has, go ahead. And that has the timeline on it.
142.
Yeah, so it's 142 and it's the second page.
So, Madam Chair, when we looked at this, we basically looked at four. There were four options. First option was we were underfunded, underappropriated, if you will. The second option is due to the settlement, we had an extra amount of money that we needed to return. The third option was we took that money and we spent it somewhere else. Or the fourth option was we never had it, or some combination of those. So what I have tried to show is that the settlement reduction in contract actually allowed us to finish this contract within the appropriations we were given without having to come back to the legislature for a supplemental or not be able to fund this contract.
Give us a minute to get that. And I'm assuming, Greg, that information coincides here. I found some of the figures on your handout of 142 that you gave us last week.
Yes, it should all correspond. And it should also correspond with Matt Wilmarth's analysis, which was done in July. My numbers are slightly more up to date. But I did agree with his July analysis.
Okay.
Madam Chairman? It's John Masters.
Sorry about that. Good morning. Go ahead, John.
We realize this is somewhat complicated, and going forward, we have in mind and have discussed with both LSO and ANI a process where we will spread the remaining portion of the Pearson contract, the future ETS contract, and any other assessment contracts such as ACT. We'll spread those across quarterly cash flow projections. And then as contract amendments or payments are made, the three bodies will sit down, make sure that we continue to be in agreement about the source of funding. We'll track those through to state budgets and federal budgets as appropriate. And the hope is that at the end of the day, we'll all know exactly where each of these contracts is. So we have a document, which is document 5, which is the very of the packet today,
okay,
which is a very rough and preliminary start on that type of a process. We've actually got a whole series of schedules supporting this that we didn't attach because of they're largely not populated at this point.
Okay, and John, which page is that on? Page 5, right?
That's page 5, yes.
The educational testing services.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Madam Chairman, let me say that we don't want to be here again on that type of point.
Right. Well, I can see the complexity in it from both the documents. Other questions on the Pearson contract? Thank you.
Madam
Madam Chairman.
Go ahead, John.
The superintendent will now rejoin us, as will Cheryl Lane, instructional leader.
Madam Chairman.
Go ahead,
Superintendent. Members of the committee. Teacher to teacher, the initiative actually was related in part to what we were just discussing. When the governor and I first entered office, the Pearson Settlement Agreement had begun negotiations and was handed off to us. What then occurred is I asked the governor if we could wait until April to move into a settlement agreement with Pearson. He agreed, and in March, I asked for a survey of all the teachers in Wyoming, of educators, because in the Pearson Settlement Agreement, it requested or it offered $2.7 million in professional development, and I did not know if that would be desired or needed in the state, given that our school districts spend a significant amount of money and time in professional development. I did not anticipate that the department would need to provide more. The survey was returned, approximately 1,200 people responded, educators across the state, and I was wrong. They did want the professional development, but there is a caveat. They didn't want it from a vendor, and they didn't want it from Pearson. So we knew that we needed to develop that from within. When we went into the Pearson Settlement Agreement, we asked for that professional development that they'd offered in cash. And we did leave with that in cash, and we know that that's returned back to the legislature. That comes back to the people. But we knew that we needed to look inside the department and start developing that which the teachers and the educators in Wyoming were requesting. And Cheryl Lane, as my instructional leader responsible for student learning, began the work. Cheryl, would you like to continue?
Madam Chair, co-chair, members of the committee, I'm Cheryl Lane, instructional leader, and I'm tasked today to do a general narrative about what we're about here with the T2T, and then our finance folks will take a look at the budget pieces. Thank you. It's very exciting to work with Superintendent Hill on improving student growth and achievement, and with the department and all of you as we move kids forward to be a premier learning institution in our state. I work with Cindy. I go on the road occasionally, and she offers her cell phone to every single person in the state. It's a very personal thing for her and for me and for all of us. We're invested in this thing. So personally, I remember 20 years or so of being in almost every single building in the state of Wyoming. And living here and belonging here, it's a personal commitment that our kids are receive the best. So with that background, I want to explain a little bit about the research evidence behind this method. It's a method of delivering professional development and technical assistance at the instructional level for our to meet our goals. So I have several. I have two or three or four here I thought I'd share really very briefly about that underpin this approach. One would be professional organizations in the United States and in the world that our teachers belong to. You've heard of National Council of Teachers of Math, National Council of Teachers of Science, National Council of Teachers of Social Studies. For instance, the International Reading Association that was begun in 1956 has something like 70,000 members across the country. And their very work and their very mission is about going teacher to teacher. There would be teacher to teacher blogs, teacher to teacher lesson plans, and so forth. And the whole idea is to raise from a teacher level the kind of expertise you want at facing your children each day in the classroom. And we in Wyoming need to pay special attention to how we can support these professional organizations. Second of all, I'm thinking about the term that you've heard. It's educational jargon, but it's PLC. We know about it throughout the whole state. It stands for Professional Learning Community. What it means is a teacher-to-teacher collaboration at school levels, at district levels. It's one of those capacities that they're called in terms of school support, that if we have this, it's a marker of moving toward excellence. And without it, it's very difficult to see gains in student achievement. So it's about teacher collaboration. And third, I've been involved for 20-odd years with the National Writing Project, and in the state, the Wyoming Writing Project. And its very principle at the core of it is this. I'll quote it. It says, teachers are the best agents of reform, and successful teachers must share with others. And so that particular model is about taking exemplary teachers with success out to share with others. Last, there is a teacher-to-teacher, the very term is used from the U.S. Department of Education, where teachers go out to share with teachers across the whole United States. So this sort of, along with a lot of others I don't bring to the table today, along with the gurus who talk about the power of working our teachers, giving them the energy and the knowledge to teach, it gives us the rationale behind and the reasoning behind what the approach we took. Snapshot of the of this teacher-to-teacher delivery system. So with that in mind, let me kind of elaborate on Cindy's story, Superintendent Hill's story, regarding the first of these initiatives, the T2T being a delivery system for a learning initiative. The first we did was 3+8. It's a reading piece. A member of our TAC, our Technical Advisory Committee, met with us last spring, almost a year ago, and said we had failed at the department level to get out the information around reading. That we did not, that somehow or other we had not blanketed the state with the knowledge of what underpins pause reading, and by the way, is really best instruction. The three being three kinds of text that are measured on pause. The eight being the eight skills or purposes for reading those three. And that information, getting that out there and having teachers get their hands into that, practicing it, would make a world of difference in their classroom instruction across all content areas. And, oh, by the way, would grow pause scores. And that was then where the first teacher-to-teacher began as a delivery method for getting this information out. An army, really, of PLC across the state. The second initiative is current as well, and it's called Special Ed Literacy. For short, we're calling it SPLIT, and we're in seven different locations over weekends to special educators. Because if you take a look at school improvement and the schools that, for instance, needed to make more growth, you'll see a lot of those are in the area of special ed. And so this is a response to those AYP schools. Another that's currently and going to happen in February and March is ACT prep, and a fourth math, and so it goes. It's enlisting our current exemplary professionals to get out there and share. The 3+8 to date, since we started last spring, I'd say we thought we were going to go to 18 sites. And instead, we've been in 31 sites training. 13 of those were callbacks, where districts or schools asked us to come back in, asked these teachers to come back in and offer training to the entire staff. The evaluations that we've been collecting have indicated a 4.69 approval out of 5 points, which is very high. So we've been in, since August, Casper, Cody, Fremont 38, Riverton, Pinedale, Evanston, Afton, Newcastle. I sound like that song Johnny Cash sings. Mm-hmm. 31 sites and more call periodically for more training yet this spring. So we've been responded to not only Superintendent Hill's, one of her core values, which is that we would be out there helping with everyone else to create a giant PLC around exemplary student achievement, but also to use our own exemplary performers, not only in teachers, but with the Principal Academy, to go teacher to teacher. We've also had actually some really happy times lately with high-performing districts sharing. and future plans there. So that's an overview. That's general. I think you'd probably want to know more questions, and I'm open to those.
Ms. Lane, when you listed off all the different communities, how many districts does that include, I mean, collectively?
That's a good question. Do you have a sense of how many districts we've been in? I'd say 30, 35. This is the interesting piece. We will go to, do a training in Afton, and people will come from Pinedale and Big Piney. They'll come over from Fremont County. They'll come from Uinta County. I'd say there has been somebody from every single county attend.
So you're building community as well
capacity
with that collaboration.
But thank you.
Other questions of Ms. Lane on the program? And then you had some information on how it was financially structured.
Good. Madam Chairman, Mr. Co-Chairman, going to change crews again.
Yep, that's
okay. Bring the finance people back up.
Keep us hopping.
Okay. Madam Chairman, we're going now to refer you to page 6 of the handout today, which is how the activity has been funded through various budgets as at this point in time, and page 7, which is the proposed, at the request of JAC, the proposed instructional budget. And we've got a lot of folks here, so I'm going to step back. Thank you. Okay.
Madam Chair.
Ms. Steele.
Mr. Co-Chair. One of the things when we, the conception of working with instruction was to plan. We had to plan. In other words, if we had to look over the coming year and think, what can we do, or how can we make sure that we have the appropriate funds to work with this methodology or strategy for our students. So in planning, you have a table on page 6. And in that table, we looked at the budgets of this current biennium. We looked at the narratives and the purposes and the intent of each of these budgets. And I have, in each of the budgets, and I certainly can go over them individually if it's your pleasure, each one has a technical assistance or a professional development element that is in the program. So in planning, division directors, supervisors, program managers, we gather together to figure out what would be our purposes for the professional development and the technical assistant pieces in each of these programs. And so the current table that you see has the money that we planned with, which we have not expended all of it, and then the funds that are remaining in each of those program budgets. And so if you would like, we could look at them individually, or what would be your pleasure, Madam Chair?
I think, go ahead, Representative Harshman.
Madam Chair, just so I heard you right, so the $280,000 of dedicated funding, the summary at the bottom, the total, is just planning of these initiatives? This actually is it implementation, or is this? So when I see these expended funds, like, well, any one of them you could pick, that isn't actually going to Pinedale and providing a workshop that you talked about. Or help me on that.
Mr. Co-Chair, I apologize. I must not have said that correctly the first time. In planning, we knew that we had this amount of money. This money then was expended as we went out into the district. So it is implementation funding also. Representative Harshman.
Go ahead. Let's go through each.
Do we, Madam Chair?
Go ahead, Representative.
Is there a list somewhere? Did you contract with folks in kind of like a 900 series then, and you have that list somewhere? Is that in the previous 900 series you gave us?
Madam Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Harshman, yes, we did use the funding in the 900 series with the teachers that were doing the instruction.
And Ms. Steele, I think what we'll do is maybe just start asking, see if there's other questions. So if we went back to the document 139 that had the vendors listed, would that help us identify who you used for this program?
Mr. Hanson? I doubt it, because we were requested to provide the major vendors.
Major vendors, okay.
And so these would not have reached the level. I think we cut it off at $20,000 per contractor, and so these would be way below that.
And they just get $5 a day or
something like that. Yeah.
Okay. Good. So maybe you could give us a little information as to how much do you estimate that an instructor would receive to do, and I'm assuming it's a weekend project, so it's a two-day seminar or something. Ms. Lane?
Madam Chair, co-chair, members of the committee, I'm going to see if I can, in implementing, planning the work to go out and do. Is the question, how much are we paying? How are we doing it? These are weekend pieces that began in a community, say, in Rock Springs, 5 p.m. on Friday evening to accommodate the desire to keep teachers in their school, in their buildings. So begin at 5 p.m. till 8 p.m. on Friday evening and go from 8 till 3:30 or 4 on Saturday.
Okay.
And so for that work, an individual teacher would be contracted. The model for that came from past experience when I've delivered, and so I had some general ideas, for instance, that I would like to have two teachers at a time be together in order to better feel the multiplicity of needs you're going to have in a room full of teachers, because you might have a first grade teacher in the mix with third grade, and so to have two there who could really make it worth those teachers' time to come out. And so that's the way that this was delivered, is a weekend piece. Okay. It took about 10 and a half or 11 hours, and those people who did desire to expand, in other words, to take it back to their buildings for an additional 5 hours, could receive credit, either Professional Teacher Standards Board credit, PTSB, 1 hour of credit, or 1 hour of university graduate credit and a workshop number. And I'd say probably about one-third of those who participated desired to do that. All of that paperwork and all of that course evaluation and teacher by teacher was something that the teachers did as well. So I'm open to any other questions.
Madam Chair.
I just was curious then, are they paid based on the full weekend or by the hour?
They're paid by the weekend.
And are you familiar with what the amount is?
I am.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. The amount was $500 for planning, time in transit, preparing materials, and then the work.
Okay.
And any follow-up and so forth. It was built into their contracts.
So,
thank you. Go ahead, Representative Harshman.
So each of the two instructors that went for a Friday night and a Saturday, they each were paid $500 for each session they did. So the expense basically was $1,000 per session.
Depending upon the numbers. For instance, if we are in Fremont, if we're in Riverton, Fremont 25, and we know we have 90 to 120 participants, we would field enough teachers in enough of the grouping, say third, fourth grade, fifth, sixth grade, and so forth, in order to be able to handle those. And we had numbers like that. For instance, in Gillette recently, 120 teachers came. And so we would have more than two, the whole goal being that this would be very rich for the teachers and their needs would be met.
Okay, so the instructors were paid $500 then.
That's right.
Per weekend.
That's right.
And then the teachers who are the students, Madam Chair, mm-hmm. The teachers who are the students, and did they receive a stipend as well as the PTSB credit?
Not during the, Madam Chair.
Go ahead.
Representative Harshman. Not during the initial kickoff for this, the 3+8. There was an extension piece possible for special ed that came through a different sort of approach.
Okay, Madam Chair.
Go ahead.
The only thing, I guess, what you read in the paper, take for a grain of salt, but that's really all I know about it. Where one teacher here that made like $65,000 to contract and plan this, and I just don't even see that somewhere in here. How does that? So I guess as we get into this, we'll probably want to see this whole list of these vendors, where they're from, and kind of what the whole scope was. But maybe comment on that, or maybe that's just a falsehood that we need to dispel now.
Madam Chair.
Ms. Link.
Mm-hmm. Representative Harshman, we did, in all of the cases of these initiatives, have someone oversee it, take care of the credit, take care of all of the materials that need to be run off, take care of all of the reservations and making sure that everyone has transportation and that so forth. And so we did contract someone part-time for a year's worth of work, and that's the contract I think you read in the paper.
Madam Chairman.
Thank you.
Mr. Masters.
Madam Chairman and Mr. Co-Chairman, Representative Harshman, the contract I think that you're referring to from the paper, what probably is seen in the paper is the total value of that contract if it's completely fulfilled. It doesn't represent an amount that's been paid to that contractor at this point in time. And we tend to be on the high side with those contracts so that we don't have to rewrite them multiple times.
Where is it profiled, John?
And I'm not
that
sure
contract.
I understand profiling quite
well,
as well as everyone
where
else.
Where is it in the budget and where is it shown on your profile?
Sure. Oh, well, it would be part of these funds that were budgeted or planned, the planning funds. And it would show up both in...
Which category on that sheet?
It would show up being spread across several categories, Senator Nicholas. And some of them would be expended and some would be unexpended. But probably what would be most helpful to you, I think, is to show you that particular contract and where that person stands in their contract.
Well, John, if you've got a $65,000 contract, it should be in one area and an authorized contract. Where is it? I don't even see that authorized in the sheets you provided us today.
Well, and I was thinking too, John, that it would, if it was $65,000, it would be here on this vendor list that you gave us in 139.
Madam Chairman, Mr. Co-Chairman, I think the vendor list that you have is the contracts as the amounts paid to date. Is that
Representative
correct?
Edmonds.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, it is on the 900 series that I see, the handout 139. 900 series, if you flip past the first page, that identifies it as 900 series. Midway down the second page, it's identified as a contract for $67,000, of which it looks like amount paid is $38,010, encumbered is $28,989. So it is on what they gave us. Mr. Chairman, if you go to the 900 series section, I think they started with 600 series. And so you got to flip past the amount paid for 600 series, which is two pages. And then it doesn't say 900. It just says Wyoming Department of Education expenditures by major vendors over $20,000. Flip that page to the second page, and it's about halfway down, identified by name as a contract for $67,000.
Madam Chairman, I'm forever indebted to Representative Edmonds. It is on the list. Thank you.
Yeah.
You know, Madam Chair.
Yeah, Representative Harshman.
So as I look at this list and I see 38,000 of this one that has been spent and another nearly 30,000 is encumbered. But see, we see this in a lot of agencies where I see all these names have no idea what any of these things are. I mean, there's just a whole bunch of names of people from 20 to 40 to 70,000 for services. But Gosh, I don't even know where the question's at in that. But maybe we need, I guess, and we've asked of other agencies, maybe to, with this, maybe put another column in this spreadsheet and some lines and tell us kind of what they did. You know, I mean, there's lots of names here, and all of them $50,000, $60,000 range. Thank you.
Mr. Co-Chairman, we can certainly provide that, and we'll do so.
Great. Okay. Representative Edmonds.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And then just to follow up, the $38,000 that's been expended, it is showing up on this sheet somewhere. I'm assuming in our bottom line of $280,000, that includes the $38,000 already. Well, I can't tell, Mr. Chairman, from this sheet exactly where it would be. I'm just asking in the bottom line figures of expended funds, they've expended $154,000. I just wanted to be sure that $38,000 was included in that expended funds. And I'm seeing nods of yes.
That's correct.
Is that, Madam Chair?
Hold on 1 second. Okay. Let's have John answer that question first. That $38,000 is in the $154,000 expended?
Yes, that's correct, Madam
Chair.
Okay.
And Representative Harshman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So with that one that Representative Edmonds has pointed out and all these other names, are any of these names, any of those, this one particular is one that is a supervisor and planner, you said, and got to have a contract for a part-time job. Are there any of these others that are actual the teachers to the teachers that we talked about that make $500? Or do they have just a $500 stipend, or is there a contract amount in here that is contracted and only some that's been encumbered? I guess I see all these names, you know, from Lesher and Cosner and Osborne and Michaeli and Polson and on and on. Are any of those folks your teachers in this teacher-to-teacher program? Or I guess I'll find out when you bring me that info. But
the superintendent would like to visit.
Sure.
Madam Chairman.
Go ahead.
Representative Harshman, no. I believe that Fred Hansen limited that list to those that were over $20,000, and none of our contractors are above $20,000.
Madam Chair, then, do you
except
actually...
for, with the exception of the $67,000
yeah, okay.
that you received.
Great.
That was the only one. The rest were below that.
In the teacher-to-teacher program, then.
In the teacher-to-teacher program, correct.
So, Madam Chair, are there...
Go ahead.
My next question then are, so I've heard of the $500 per weekend, and is that part of a under $20,000 contract then perhaps, or is there a, or do you just pay them a stipend $500, or do you contract with them like, say, $15,000 to do, you know, 30 of these workshops?
Madam Chairman, Representative Harshman, we pay them per each event.
Okay.
So it, and it's regarding not just that weekend, but all the planning and preparation that goes prior to that weekend.
Sure. Okay, thank you.
Representative Edmonds.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And maybe this question will help. How do you identify these teachers? How have you gone into the districts and decided who is qualified to teach it and who isn't?
Ms. Lane.
Madam Chairman. Representative Edmonds. My experience over the last 20 years has been to do some staff development with the National Writing Project and with other initiatives like that. And so there is virtually a small army of individuals who've received a vast amount of training and that I'm aware of their training. So that would be one. It would be important to me to know, for instance, if we're going out to do reading, that we have reading experts here. And that those people have had experience before sharing around the state. So that would be important. But also that they have very exemplary performance that you can go and check and look at in terms of their PAWS performance. So and have a mix of people across the state. So large schools, small schools, and so forth. So we could give a profile of each individual if that were necessary. Started with a group of individuals, however, with high performance and with past experience in presenting to their fellow teachers so that they could do a really good job. They've done this very same thing in their districts before, for instance. They have maybe been instructional facilitators, but they're actual classroom teachers by and large, and that they know they can deliver. If we're going to go out and do this on behalf of the state, we want it to be very successful and for teachers to say, this was the best thing I've ever done, and thank you so much for coming to do this.
Madam Chairman,
mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Representative Edmonds, we know that it matters to teachers that the people who are working with them are actually teaching, are actually doing exactly what they're doing every day and yielding results in their classroom. So not only do we look for teachers who hopefully are in the classroom, but are willing to step out on Friday nights after a long day's work or long week's work, and Saturdays, and share those resources that they're using every week.
Representative Harshman.
So, Madam Chair, so just if we could just on these 900 series, and just a little more info on what service they're providing, where they're from, and they're in state, out of state, those kind of things. But then I guess on this program, kind of taking off on Representative Edmonds' question, then. Maybe just a one- or two-pager of who these folks are, where they're from, how much has been paid to them, and maybe, you know, where they work, those trainings. And then I guess the other thing, usually when you have some kind of professional development, there's some way to judge whether it's effective or not. Do you do some kind of surveys? Are you keeping them? Maybe you'd like to answer that.
Reverend Tillhill.
Madam Chairman, Representative Harshman, we do have those surveys that you would, and we've kept them and we have compiled them. So if you would like to see those, but I will tell you what I also value. Representative Harshman, when we began, we thought there'd be a few hundred teachers because, again, it was on Friday nights and Saturdays and we weren't paying them to come out. It was on their time. And what we found is that we've been asked into a number of districts. Cheryl Lane shared that with you, more than 10. We've asked to come back and train an entire group of faculty. And I think that in itself tells you that it must be worthy.
Okay, thank you.
I just wanted to follow up on Representative Harshman. So this, what you have are the, in that black book, are the surveys returned from the professionals who had taken the training?
Yes, Madam Chairman.
Okay, good. And then the next thing is, how are you going about measuring your outcomes for the students that the teachers will now be teaching with their updated skills?
Sir, Madam Chair, committee, that's a really, really good question. In the end, how we'll know is by student performance as measured on PAWS or other measures we trust. And so we've talked about how could we evaluate it student by student to see their growth, to see their achievement. It's literally impossible. People don't necessarily register formally. They show up. For instance, we were in Rock Springs this past weekend with 80-some people registered to attend, and it was a snowstorm. We took a team of teachers to deal with the numbers. Lo and behold, some folks had driven over from Lyman, a whole car full, a Suburban full, who thought they were coming to 3+8 training on reading, and we were doing literacy training on special ed. And one of our members broke out and offered an entirely different training for those. So it's very adaptable, and hence hard to track your students next year on PAWS reading. Especially given, for instance, that writing has been pulled from the general measure for literacy, and so how are we going to really see that growth? But in the end, it's several ways, and one is a point system for perceived value. And so, for instance, I'm looking at one. I flip one open. Shan and Andrea did it. They're primary people. Andrea comes from a school that had 100% of her third graders proficient on PAWS. All fives, and this session created an atmosphere to rethink our negative attitudes toward PAWS. And her first step she's going to do is share with her administration. And they're like this, one after the other after the other. So when I said that out of a scale of five, the average score was 4.69, which is incredibly high, I'm not a numbers person, but my friend over here who is that that's almost unheard of in terms of approval. We have that, and we have what we hope to be, and I trust to be, improved performance on measures, which is what we're all for, we're all about. That reading scores in our state that have lagged behind writing and math move. They improve. And that we can see that the money and effort and time we've all expended here somehow shows up in data. And I trust it will, but I don't have that. The spring assessment is yet to be. It will be hard to ferret out. And in the world of education in this state, I must tell you that if I know something and I'm at Cary Junior High, all my colleagues down the hall will know. So it'll be very hard to track that I'm the one that went to 3+8 training. But it will be it will make a positive impact. I've seen it too often in the field of education to deny it. So I trust it will do its job. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Other questions on T2T?
Madam Chair, it's John again. Would you like us to leave this book, or would you like to have the book for your records, or what's your pleasure on that?
Maybe we'll take a break and we can have a look at it and okay. See if the committee wants to keep it for a while.
Certainly.
Okay. Good. All right. If there are no further questions on T2T, we'll move on. Thank you.
Let's stay here.
Madam Chair, Mr. Co-Chair.
Sure, Mr. Masters.
We were asked at our original presentation to prepare what we would call an IBARS. Obviously, this is not done with the IBAR system, but it's intended to look like it. It's page 7, and this would be if the professional development and an assessment tool was broken out, how would it spread across the IBARS? And that's what page 7 looks like. This would be for the upcoming biennium.
And you worked with ANI office to coordinate this?
I don't believe we worked with ANI. We just took the okay. We made it look as though it had come through IBARS. It has not.
Okay. All right. Committee, any questions on this? Okay. Continue, John.
I think we're nearing down. Okay.
I think we're on the payroll vacancies.
Yeah. Madam Chair, Mr. Co-Chair. You will find as item 8A, B, and C, the vacancy report. We have provided a very rough vacancy report for you at our original presentation. This vacancy report is intended to provide a bit more reflection of what the status is of those vacancies, why they are vacant, or when they were filled. And this was prepared by our HR director, Megan Meeson. So she, along with the division directors, are here to answer any questions you might have.
Committee, are there any questions on the vacancy report? I guess we can continue. You got lucky, Megan. Sit down before we ask you another question.
And Madam Chair, the final document that we provided was our analysis, again at the request of your co-chair, of the involvement in moving our assessment office from Laramie to Cheyenne. And so page 9 reflects the cost of that, and we also have people could address the benefits that have been realized within the department. So
just to ask you, with respect to the construction costs, out of what account was that paid?
That's a good question. What account was the were these funds paid from? Okay. Why don't you sit down, Graham?
6102, is that correct, Mr. Hansen?
Yes, I believe if we're speaking of the 4,400, that came out of 6102.
What is the 6102 account?
Madam Chair, the 6102 account is the department's admin account.
What?
The department's admin account.
an item in the admin account for construction costs?
Madam Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, there is not a construction cost. These were the moving costs and the removal of certain walls, the movable walls within second floor and
no,
also
and that's
the first
a construction
floor.
Cost.
I'm sorry.
That's a construction cost. It says here. Moving walls. Now, did you get State Building Commission authority to move the walls?
I'll address that.
Madam Chairman, Senator Nicholas, I did speak with two of the building commissioners.
Did it go to the board and get approval?
I did not sit down with the board.
And did it go to A&I to make the changes? It's their building.
I did work with A&I.
Did they do why didn't they do the changes?
Madam Chairman, Senator Nicholas, they did the changes. They did it efficiently, and they were done quickly.
So all these costs were incurred. They were just bills paid by A&I?
Madam Chairman, Senator Nicholas, correct.
Okay.
They're one-time costs. The savings, as you can see, is approximately $100,000 for this year and $276,000 for every biennium moving forward. And if you don't mind, Madam Chair, I did happen to explore where those funds for the rental for the Laramie office were coming last night. Thank you, Christine Steele. Around 10 o'clock, she told me that it was coming out of 6105, State Standards and Assessments Budget, 6108, State School Improvement Budget. We were paying approximately $138,000 per year, $276,000 per biennium out of two budgets that were actually directed for school improvement and State Standards and Assessment.
So then you moved those people in your existing space and you're able to harness them all in that space?
Madam Chairman, Senator Nicholas, we have, and I invite you to come over and see how we're teaming together.
And then as I understand the construction costs, then A&I moved all the walls. They paid for everything.
Madam Chairman, Senator Nicholas, we paid for it, and they did the work.
Okay, thanks.
Other questions on this issue? Thank you. All right, that's the last document of your callback request. Are there other comments? Other questions, committee, of Ms. Hill?
Madam Chairman, thank you for your time today.
Thank you. Appreciate your bringing this information. Bill, did we have a Board of Nursing up before OCIO? Okay. Let's committee take a 15-minute break and get back here about 10 to 10 or a little bit earlier. Thank you.
I stay awake just for the breaks.
Are you guys okay? Well, we could just give you a new box and not. Just give us a cost code.
It ought to work. Thank you.
Yeah, well, and she's been involved in the beginning. So I think we certainly should get to how we started again. Looking at very much. And I'll play nice that you straight from, you know, WDE and our project right there. It really helped us get through it a lot more smoothly. Very nice meeting you.
Morning, Ray. I'm dandy. How are you?
No problem.
Oh, you gotta be back in a minute.
Okay.
Getting along, I guess. Yourself?
I'm good. I'm Cindy Salon from the Board of Nurses.
Hi, Cindy.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. Yeah. I still got a question for you guys. Is have we ever gotten our nursing exams straightened out so these guys and gals at the community colleges who get their training don't have to wait forever or travel clear across the state before they can go to work?
As far as taking their examination, there's one in Casper where they can take their exams, and then there's some in Denver and over in Nebraska.
Wow, you got to do better.
You know, Denver's not that far. I had a daughter that took the RN exam, and I took her to Denver. It was even shorter than Casper. Just, you know, coordinate the dates to when you can go. And but Casper's pretty, you know.
Can you get me a date the dates of when all those are? So I can figure out whether or not we still have as much problem. It sounds like we have the same problem we get there. What they were telling me is that they get out or they'd end the semester at, you know, maybe they end the semester, start of the spring semester, they graduated, and then they couldn't take the test till, you know, 3-4 months later.
Well, there's requirements that have to be met. We have to get their transcripts, their grades, before they're allowed to take the examination.
Right.
So a lot of it depends on the colleges. Like over Christmas break, we were waiting on LCCC's transcripts, grades from all their students before they can even go schedule their examination.
Right, right. So, well, could we?
Sure, Mr. Berger can talk to you about that too. Mr. Berger, Todd.
Yeah, of course.
Question on your examination schedules for these people that get educated at our community colleges.
Okay.
Yeah, I guess, okay, what's the average time from the time they graduate to the time that they can take their test?
They can take their test, their NCLEX test, immediately. Most of them choose to review and study and prepare. And so the determinant is pretty much up to them. But after they graduate, there's a process for turning in. They have to get their transcripts
in to the board of
nursing. And then we have to prove. But it's a matter of like a couple of weeks. They just have to be verified as having graduated from an official program. Most of the delay comes in them, you know, the fear factor. I don't want to fail, and you know, I hadn't studied that for 2 years. And so most of the delay is them waiting to take their NCLEX. When I did mine, I waited a month.
Yeah. And then I guess, besides NCLEX, are there other tests that you guys administer for, like, CNAs and things like that?
CNAs take a federal guideline test. It's called the NAPSEP, Nurse Administration Testing Competency Examination Program.
All right, here we go.
The NAPSEP program is a 2-week program. They finish that. They test out of that to pass the class. Then they're required to take a national test that is administered through the Red Cross. Just this year, we passed a new rule that allows them to get a graduate nursing assistant temporary permit. Mm-hmm. We grant that immediately when they finish the class, and we give them 120 days of coverage to work, to study, to take their national test, and become certified. We now have that in law that they can be.
So they got a 4-month schedule. Yeah, okay. Well, that's better than it has been.
It is.
Okay.
We worked really hard on getting that
past. Well, you're starting to move in the right direction. So all the nursing homes, if they come in, they're 100% satisfied with what's going on.
I'm sure they are.
From all of us.
I'm sure. And if they're not, we're
live when we're doing the cloud, it really doesn't matter. They all work.
Margaret, I have about three devices that Phil has for me. Some of them are PC, the Droid phone, but what I'm trying to figure out is how to get all those things to sync.
By all apples. And everything works. Everything works. But all of us Congress in the legislature, many who are not very computer savvy, that's the way to go.
Well, this thing is great. I have every budget on it, and I can mark them up. I can draw on them right here.
That's what I say. We should have tablets here instead of these rings of paper.
Well, I got the tablet option this go around, but I still haven't gotten
it. I did too, but they're not. That tablet's not as easy. I can't get a mouse or a move on it.
All
right.
So can I come over here and sit with
the enemy? Of course, the enemy. You
would
never.
Just once you got out of the committee, you were gone.
That's right. You did not even see my
there were papers.
Smoke, did you?
I really love it. I finally got my wife as well. She's taking classes.
Hello, Marguerite. I'm well, and yourself?
Keys relevant to
this. And arresting. Arresting kid when he gets out there. He's doing well. I hope he's doing better than his brother.
Older
brother. Older brother.
See, now I've been doing that.
Older brother was just working on
legislative computer
7 years.
Oh, is that right?
And we're thinking about maybe 20. We're not going to become a doctor or a priest or anything like that.
But
get your stuff gathered here.
Meteorology is that really?
Oh, I'm sorry. I know. That's why I sent you home. I wanted you bright-eyed and bushy-tailed here.
Yeah, the one thing I've noticed with the Google Docs is that sometimes
you know that his mom and dad died from a heart
attack.
Read our obituary.
And for me, it depends on if I want to use the if I want to change formats. What I'll do is I'll take the content, show it up to Google, publish it, I'll pull it back up in Word.
When I've had Word docs and put them up there and then pull them back down, I always have to wind up redoing the format.
That is a struggle. Now there's,
you know what, I'll tell you,
I mentioned that.
Sounds good.
might not get a contract.
Just see if the one is working on the
computer. Yeah.
No, I'm just saying. Okay.
So actually,
but also,
it works, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Well, you know what? Everybody's brother, you know, I still know.
trying to get my board, my committee members in here. Oh, thank you. Good morning. We have the Board of Nursing with us, and if you would, this is a callback in regards to some of the issues in your budget. So if you want to identify yourself, and then we'll just start with your presentation.
Madam Chairman, my name is Marguerite Herman. I'm the consumer representative member of the Board of Nursing.
Madam Chairman, Mr. Co-Chairman, I am Todd Berger. I am the Assistant Executive Director for the Board of Nursing.
Madam Chairman, Senator Co-Chairman, I am Cindy Stallone, and I'm the Fiscal HR Officer for the Board of Nursing.
Great, and I think you know we're here in regards to your budget and to look at the, what we called it, just a deficit spending, just to get a review from you as to what your members are expecting and how. Committee members, do you all have the Board of Nursing out? It's in the A&I book. Six B, actually. All right.
And Madam Chairman, just to draw your attention to, we distributed a handout number 190.
All right.
It's a fact sheet that summarizes our costs to license nurses and CNAs and the discipline costs, which actually has driven much of our increases in spending the past few years. And then attached to that is a proposed license structure that has just now started to go out for public comment and go through that process, which is how we're proposing to respond to our increased expenditures. And other than that, we're available to answer questions. I can represent the sense of the board, and Mr. Berger and Ms. DeLon have access to all the math and the numbers, and they can answer any of those questions as well.
Margaret, I think what got everybody's attention pretty quickly is I think last year, in the last couple of years,
I don't care.
Nursing came in and said, look, we have a bunch of extra reserves that we've piled up. We want to buy a building. And as I understand it, and it looks like maybe that's the case, and so now what's happening is you're spending into those reserves that you're using for the building reserve out of your operating money. So you're taking in less money than you're spending, and you're taking out of that building reserve account, which is, if you maybe, is that, are those the correct facts, I guess?
Ms. Huron, let me just respond to that, the initial push to acquire a building was driven by the large amount we spend on rent. So it was driven, ironically, by an attempt to reduce our spending. And we have those numbers if you want them. But just, and so, and at the time, it looks like we have this large reserve, but what has happened, and I guess, you know, I'll, as a board member, take some responsibility for not doing a more thorough job of, as our budgets came in, looking at the reserves and how they were going down, and those two lines cross in about 2 years, and that's the crunch we're in, why we're looking for increased fees. The big surplus that we thought was there that was being replenished every 2 years with our application fees, in fact, it was a decreasing amount, and our looking about buying a building was not recognizing that decreasing amount, of which we are abundantly aware at this point. Not, needless to say, we have abandoned any search for, I guess we're always searching for maybe cheaper accommodations, but we're not looking to buy at this point.
Well, I guess when I heard the conversation from A&I, in general, my concern is this, is that if your members are out paying dues and they're not paying the full rate and you're going into reserves, now, I can understand if you built up reserves for a purpose, like the building, and at the end of the day you change your philosophy, and you say, okay, we built that reserve for building. We're no longer going to acquire the building, so let's go ahead and start lowering our dues and essentially return that to your, while the old members paid it, we'll return it to the new members through lower rates. That'd be fine. But if you have a rate that your nurses think are expensive and they don't know their deficit spending, so at the end of the day, instead of pulling your costs down to meet your expenses, you're going to the reserve. So at the end of the day, you said, oh, by the way, we just spent through a couple million dollars of reserves over the last few years. Now we need to tax you. If your members are well aware of the fact that your deficit spending, as opposed to lowering your costs, I think it's just a matter of disclosure so everybody knows what's happening.
Madam Chairman, Senator Nicholas, and that's exactly what we need to do when we put this fee structure out, is to inform. And again, just to clarify that our costs have increased dramatically the past few years if we tried to get a handle on the discipline cases, and they've quadrupled in the past few years. And part of that is because we're trying to do a real diligent job as given our duty or a charge given to us in our statutes, and we're trying to do a diligent job of investigate and follow through on discipline complaints, resolve them quickly. And just as a little bit of background also, that, you know, we're not a membership, we're a licensing board. So we don't really have members, they're not dues, they're licensing fees. And you're absolutely right that the purpose of the fees is to cover the expenses of applications, of all licensure, applications and discipline. And the costs have gone up dramatically with the great job we're doing, frankly, but also the volume of the job we're doing. And it's just that, and in fact, attached with the fees, if what we're trying to do is get them in place by our next application cycle so we can start collecting the higher fees to cover our costs. And that's where we are right now. We're trying to do the due diligence, be fiscally responsible, and we are going to have to inform our licensees because you're right. I don't think they are fully aware of it.
Ms. Herrmann, can you tell me, besides the fact that you have increased your efforts on due diligence, what else is causing the increase in the discipline cases?
Good question. I could defer to Todd here, but I think part of it is because we're just doing a better job at getting the word out, how to file complaints, and I think our staff is doing a better job at investigating complaints. Fewer complaints are just dismissed, although, I think our process is better and more complaints are being handled responsibly. And we've got a great online website. I invite you all to take a look at it. There, the complaint forms are accessible there. And so I think the process sort of generates more interest in availing that procedure. And Todd here can also explain if TV's allowed to speak at this point.
Sure. Yeah, Mr. Berger.
Madam Chair, Mr. Co-Chair Nicholas, there's a couple of things that I believe have been misunderstood. One is that our current fee structure that we're generating revenue from was established 12 years ago in 1999. During the last 12 years, our general expense appropriation budget has increased 273%, and our revenues haven't. That is the situation that we find ourselves in that we have a revenue structure that was set many years ago, and it was adequate for probably half of that decade in our licensing base increasing and increasing some revenue at that rate. Within the last 4 to 5 years, complaints initiated to the board on against nurses have risen dramatically. From in 2008, there were about 55 complaints registered against nurses in the state, and just last year there were 205. That's about a 273% increase just in complaints. So when those complaints come in, we have to generate an investigation. We were so far behind in investigating the complaints that were generated to our board, it was taking upwards of almost a year, 300 and some odd days, from the time a complaint was filed until it was closed. That was unacceptable. We needed more staff to handle the workload. Over the last 3 years, we have added 3 full-time positions. Our salaries is, of course, the greatest segment of our budget. And it has been proven that we need these extra people to handle this workload. We have a nurse monitoring program that initially handled 12 people. We check the nurses for substance abuse evaluations. It has now grown to 50 to 70 nurses. And what was just supposed to be a part-time position has almost evolved into a full-time position. Our expenses have grown enormously, and our fees haven't.
Go ahead.
I guess a couple things alarm me when I hear this. I mean, first of all, most of these nurses are being trained in our institutions, in our community colleges, and we put in a tremendous lot of our commitment and resources to building nursing colleges, building staffing the faculty, really ramping up nursing. I think if you go look at all the dollars we put into everything from the recruitment programs to the loan repayment programs to the funding the community colleges, it's a tremendous commitment. And so that sure alarms me. And then the flip side of this, most of these nurses are public employees, either at your public hospitals or a lot of them are state employees, I assume. And so every time if you do a rate increase, for most part, that rate increase gets passed to the high school, or if institutions are paying for it, or if the state's paying those licensing dues, then we're roundabout paying them. So with that concern in mind, I guess, are these numbers that you've shared with our colleges, with the UW, with the folks that are training these young nurses, and are you getting a handle on what's happening, what's changing? I mean, Marguerite, you say it's because we're doing a better job of bringing in complaints, but one wonders whether either the education or the continuing education component is hitting the mark.
Madam Chairman, Senator Nicholas, first of all, our licensees have increased dramatically, and certificate holders. So state programs are working great at creating a bigger workforce, although we've heard recently that we're still going to lag behind with our aging population. And the complaints, 205, just realize we have 15,000 licensees and certificate holders. So I don't want to give the impression that there's rampant unsafe or incompetent practice out there. But the fact is our caseload has quadrupled in the past few years. And the improvements in just applications we have online applications now. The IT part of that has cost a lot of money, but you talk about services rendered to our license holders. They can go online; it's much easier for them, and so that actually is a benefit to them and their employers. They can do online checking of their licensure, so they are benefiting from our greater efficiency in the application, and employers are benefiting, and the public ultimately is benefiting from our efficient handling of the complaints. And as Todd mentioned, the nurses who need monitoring because of whatever, substance issues, that helps them, you know, maintain safe practice, and we hope get back into a full license, full nursing after it's done. But as part of this, you know, seeking these fee increases, we have an obligation. We will do it to explain to everybody, all the stakeholders, the licensees, certificate holders, the employers, everybody who has a stake in this, explaining what we're doing, and lay our books open and say, you know, this is what we're doing with your money. These are the costs we've incurred, and certainly we expect to hear back. And we don't seek these lightly. On the front of the fact sheet, you can just see kind of how we've sought some income over the past few years to increase fees or go through the legislature, and those have not been successful. So, you know, it's been over 10 years. So, and that's just, you know, we just did the math, and that's how we ended up. And we certainly respect the, you know, our obligation to inform our stakeholders of how we came to this decision and the numbers that we are seeking to put in place.
Ms. Hiraman, have you presented this fee structure proposal to the Labor and Health? I'm not in tune with all the activities of all the committees. I wondered where you are in the legislative process on the fee structure.
Madam Chairman, what we've done is we've submitted them to the governor's office. That's the first stop along the way.
No, not. Okay.
It's an administrative, I'm sorry, Madam Chairman, it's an administrative procedure, you know, rulemaking, but we certainly want to bring the Labor Committee, you know, into the loop and keep them fully advised on what we're trying to do and why, because they are.
Madam Chairman, you know, maybe the answer is if you would follow up by, you know, preparing the letter that gives your leadership or your stakeholders, you've described it, sort of the 10,000 foot, said, look, we are deficit spending. We're pulling out of this account that was there. Our line crossing is hitting on such and such date. At that time, we'll be looking for fee increases. And we brought it to the attention of the JAC and to the Labor Committee, but so what it provides is the opportunity for stakeholders to say, time out, you need to lower your expenses as opposed to doing what you're doing. But that's, as long as it's exposed and you guys wrestle with it openly, then it is what it is.
Mr. Berger?
Madam Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, I may direct your attention to this nursing licenses handout that I provided. This is a full description. There is a summary on page 3 of where we stand. There is a full narrative that explains the history and how we arrived at this determination of a new fee structure starting on page 6. I believe, Senator Nicholas, this is exactly what you're asking for. We have submitted a rule change. Our Chapter 5 in Administrative Rules and Regulations was submitted to Governor Meade on Friday. We have a meeting with his staff then to cover all the details of that, but we are proposing a new fee structure. We prefer not to call it a fee increase because the previous fees just weren't they weren't adequate to cover the expenses as they have grown and as our new realities of our board has grown. So we're putting out a new fee structure. We realize it probably will not be popular because it's going to be expensive. It's going to be more expensive in Wyoming. But we have the reality that we have the smallest licensing base of any state in order to cover the same types of fees that many other states have.
Well, and Mr. Berger, if you go to page 9, looking at the proposed fee structure, so what you would be proposing to the people that are getting their licenses, those, they seem pretty nominal. I'm not certain.
Madam Chair.
If you could maybe show me how this works.
Madam Chair, I appreciate that that description. When we look over what is projected, actually the state, the Wyoming Labor Force projected these salaries for APRNs and CNAs, and we can find similar projections for all nurses across the nation. For a biennial, for a two-year period, those are the projected wages. We projected 1/1000th of the biennial wage as the increase. That is what we proposed as to increase from where we're currently at. We wanted to add on that amount. When the full, if you'll turn your attention to, I believe it's page 12, what we determined to be the final fee, we actually figured out a way to spread it over 4 or 5 years so that the full increase doesn't hit them all at once. And when you take a look at the final fee structures for initial licenses and renewals, it comes out between 17 hundredths of a percent to 2/10 of a percent of their wage is what we're asking for a fee, for a licensing fee, the ability to practice in Wyoming. So that is how that was structured. I appreciate you saying that that looks like a very nominal amount.
Go ahead.
What are you doing for your lease? I mean, you've got a plan. Is that 1810 Pioneer? What building is that, by the way?
That's the old Title I insurance. I mean, I don't know if you're, how long you've been here. I'm sorry, Madam Chairman.
That's all right.
Dr. Singer, the DO, had a, it's on the corner of 18th and Pioneer. It's a small brick building. It's offset from the street. There's an off-street parking. It used to be a title office. I don't know what it's.
In a medical office before that.
That's what I think. Yeah. Madam Chairman, and actually it was an A&I rental expert, whatever. Anyway, it was an agent for the state who found the building for us originally, and so we really weren't part of that whole negotiation. And
from come up
2013. Yes, Madam Chairman, and I know the current landlord is showing it around and would like to sell it, but the price is very high, and we are balancing the cost of moving, which is awful. Of course, now with so many things being electronic, it makes it a little bit easier, against the need for more space, more appropriate space, certainly less expensive space. I think we can do better with this current leasing office space in Cheyenne these days. So we're looking into it.
Madam Chair.
Go ahead, Mr. Berger.
Senator Nicholas, I wanted to move back just briefly to the buying the building situation. When we started looking at this, the rental that we were paying, and I took a look at that and did the numbers, if the same monthly rent were applied to a mortgage, it was unreal what we could have afforded at that time. And that's how the process started. We started looking into, well, what about if we bought something and rather than paying rent, we were paying a mortgage at a very low interest rate and providing a property for the state. In meeting with the building commission, that was when, and Rich Cathcart informed us that as a public agency, we weren't allowed to carry a mortgage. Then the discussion evolved into, well, do you have the money to pay for it outright? And that's how that whole thing worked out. We didn't just start off by saying we have a big bucket of money and we want to go buy a building. It started as a very reasonable idea that we could transform lease payments into mortgage payments and provide an asset to the state at the same time and save money. We projected that we could have saved between 7% and 10% off our budget by cutting the lease payments that we have now and turning them into a building.
Well, but I wasn't part of that conversation, but I understand what Director Cathcart's saying, Rich is saying, but there's other solutions to that problem. I mean, if we're looking at property and it makes sense to acquire it, then there's acquisition mechanisms.
We were looking
at the property.
Yes, sir.
Okay, but you're now losing that margin, whatever that margin was that you had to go out and buy a building. It's evaporating pretty quickly.
Right. Representative, but it's about the boards. Yeah, go ahead.
Madam Chair, I was going to wait till after the budget was looked at in some of these questions, just for a broader question of did you guys establish a policy as a board? We passed some legislation about withdrawing blood for possible DUIs, for requiring the hospitals and nursing to do so. And I remember there was some pushback at some various hospitals of some nurses didn't want to do it because they thought it violated their oath. And I didn't know if you guys had a policy decision that you came to as a board, or if you just kind of let that to the individual, or if it cleared itself.
Madam Chairman, we license nurses and issue certificates to CNAs, and really what nurses may want to do in the scope of their work with their employer is really beyond anything. We will set maybe opinions on practice, but has not come under our purview. So,
good. Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Getting back to the lease issue, have you looked at maybe combining your space with other boards, Board of Medicine?
Madam Chairman, actually, that has just come onto our radar. We've been fortunate that the Board of Medicine is very generous with their ample and very nice board office. Right now, we're meeting in the old title company's vault, which is good thing we're not claustrophobic because it's but anyway, so and the building that the Board of Medicine in, we understand, may or may not become available to purchase, and there are other boards that are interested. That certainly, you know, once that option becomes available, we will look at it very seriously, because if it's a good space and then saves money, that's great.
Other questions? Go ahead. Did you have follow-up? No, okay. Go ahead, Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Since we've kind of touched on the idea of consolidation, when I was going through the budgets over the weekend, it occurs to me that there's at least 12, 13, 14 boards that are all in some way touching health. And I assume that this would be quite an undertaking, but perhaps what we should look to for the long run is consolidation, not just of space, but of many of the administrative functions, many, you know, the sharing of the special revenue accounts. We have other boards that are also dealing with unsustainable situations. I don't think that's probably something bigger than we can do in a budget footnote, I'm assuming, but I think it's something that needs serious consideration for the long run.
And I think, Representative Wallace, we touched on that earlier when we were reviewing the boards, and we should have that on our interim list to look at as part of a reorganization, or if that's valid. But you make some good observations on that. Other comments from the Board of Nursing?
Madam Chairman, just that in some states do have what they call umbrella boards for, you know, related health or other issues, and I think the sense of the board right now is we think it would not increase our efficiency and may actually muddle it. But, you know, certainly if the legislature wants to have that discussion, we are more than happy to do our homework and enter the discussion.
Good. Okay. Thank you very much for the information. Oh, go ahead, Representative Esquivel.
Yeah, I'm thinking, Madam Chairman, to give you guys an insight about what we're facing here. we established the Board of Midwifery, and we only have three licensures. So it's not so much from your standpoint where you have like 16,000, but it's us incorporating one of those smaller ones into under your umbrella that are unsustainable.
Okay. If there are no further questions, I think we're finished. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you all very much.
Yeah. The wolf in the hen house. I love it. So next up is our OCIO, Agent Department 306. Flynn will just take a second here.
Madam Chair.
Go ahead, Representative Harshman.
I'd like you to notice that the head technology man in the state has an apple in front of him.
I wondered how he got permission for that. Did he give it to himself?
Madam Chair, that was the first approval when I came in the door.
I am sorry. Somehow I've been carrying around 306 and I have lost it. Carolyn, have we got an extra one on 306, the OCIO? Huh? No, I have misplaced mine. I need the budget. Just hope she's got one. Don't worry. I know, yeah, you don't even use yours, but. Okay. We're ready, Mr. Waters. You've got a handout here, and I'm sure we'll have further discussion.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Mr. Co-Chair. I'd like to thank the committee. I'm Flint Waters, the Executive Branch Chief Information Officer, and with me is the Deputy CIO, Meredith Bickle. We were asked to return to discuss in greater detail the bottom line cost to the state for the proposed budget transformation that would move us from a complete cost recovery entity to a hybrid model where we did cost recovery for value-add services and had a general budget, sort of standard transparent budget, for core services across the state. Thanks to some outstanding effort and contribution from the Budget Office, A&I Office of the Director, and LSO, I have a handout that I'd love to take credit for that we've passed around to everyone. However, it was their work that broke down how we could do the recovery on these funds to ensure the state was not starting from behind in this effort to try and save money. If I could draw your attention to that handout. Hopefully everyone has one. It,
it's number 188. Okay, continue, Flint.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The thanks to your input and inquiry as to being able to expedite the recovery of the funds from the federal government and not have to delay that, I'm proud to report that folks have been able to find a way to ensure that we are able to recover that money this year or during that biennium and not have to wait. So we have a breakdown of the actual general fund request for 13-14 at $22.8 million. There is one general fund item in there that is the Public Safety Communications Commission for $179,000, which is a standard item that we receive each year. So that isn't an additional cost to the state. We also found where we could replace general fund dollars out of our depreciation reserve because we are moving some of that equipment to a general fund appropriation, that is a one-time opportunity for us to pay for $2.2 million of that equipment, which brings us to a subtotal for the general fund request of $20,426,000. Of that, there would be a $9.8 million reduction in removal from 400 series elsewhere in budgets around the state, so that would be an immediate recovery. The second half is a 300 series transfer of $9.4 million, and that covers the transfer related to federal funds and non-general fund agencies. So those commissions and other entities like Game and Fish that receive funding and pay us, we'd be able to recover that immediately. That leaves a bottom line outlay for the state of $1.2 million for general fund costs to do this transformation. Now, I have included in that handout some of the breakdown of those items and where this would, why that is a value. It seems odd that we would expend $1.2 million to transform a budget that is supposed to be an operation that saves money. And I've done a fair bit of research. I have some background material to share with you. I'll keep it fairly short. One of the assessments relates to the move to a more transparent budget and a sustainable model so that each biennium you will see a menu of the services that we're providing and the actual cost to provide those services to additional agencies. So if an agency wants to pick up 10 new servers and brings you a request for $8,000 for each for those servers, you'll be able to quickly compare and see how much it would cost for us to provide that for them. In an assessment that was done by four government entities by STA, it's a consolidation organization out of California, they did an assessment on the consolidation of just 34 file servers, 34 physical servers that they went in and reviewed the cost to move those to a central entity. As they reviewed those, they looked at the price related to the power consumption, which is dramatically more than the actual cost of the servers itself, as well as the total cost of ownership related to the number of people to maintain servers as they move forward. And in a consolidation proposal where they brought in 34 servers, their total cost of ownership reduction over a three-year cycle was $956,000. This is just a fraction of the demonstrable savings we can look at for the state as we move to more informed purchase of this equipment and a better informed process for justifying the FTEs. In their review, part of that savings stemmed from a reduction of 2.5 FTE positions required to manage those servers to a half of an FTE position. And that's where we start to see significant ongoing and sustainable savings. It's relatively dramatic. The cost to run these servers varies. The power and cooling extension in most states runs about five times the cost of the server itself. Now, Wyoming is very fortunate. We don't spend quite that much on our electricity and on our cooling, and so I wouldn't say that ours is in that ballpark. But even if I can get a reduction of 3-to-1 in the savings related to those servers, we're going to be able to see a very dramatic savings over the life of this transformation. And significantly, it's structured so that you'll see that every year, whether I'm the CIO and this is the GAC, so as we transition out to other bodies, that model will still be in place. And I know that Mr. Co-Chair asked that when we review this, we look at something that was sustainable and could provide ongoing information as the personalities shifted.
Good. That's a great example.
Madam Chair.
Go ahead. Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Are you going to be able to bring us, as we move through this, it sounds like you've already got metrics set up in every agency with all these different areas where you're going to be putting in these improvements. Are you going to be able to bring us something that says, by doing this, we have achieved this much value?
Madam Chair.
Mr. Waters.
Representative Wallace, it is a mandate on us that we report back annually in the proposed new agency legislation with the results of our quality management assurance, not only in terms of what we're looking at in savings, but in terms of our obligations for service level commitment and how well we're meeting the needs of the agencies. Because there are two measurables there. One, do we save money? And I think that will be easily demonstrable. But other is, are we actually meeting the expectations? So we intend to place the burden on ourselves to make sure we routinely deliver on both. both of those fronts and bring that information back to you.
Madam Chair.
Senator Von Slater.
Thank you. Mr. Waters, so we're going to see as JEC, we'll see actual proposals for still for all the computer software from every agency, and it'll either have your blessing on it or not, or just have a comparison of what you could do that for them for. I guess my thought of this concept was that it would all be agency run through you, and we would see it from you tagged to that agency. I guess I'm a little confused to how that's going to work.
Mr. Waters.
Madam Chair. Senator, there is a step in this process where we would contribute that information back to the agencies as they make their requests. But if the legislation passes and we move towards that consolidation, it is not the intent to consolidate all IT staff from all the agencies. There's a fair amount of subject matter expertise in agencies that is best suited to remain where it sits. Game and Fish is an excellent example. The e-commerce system that they continue to operate may well require server load, may well require equipment, and you'll see requests that come in. As it gets reviewed by our office, we'll put in an assessment in there and that we can provide virtual services in these areas. And in some of what they're doing, this doesn't fit what we're able to do as part of the core enterprise. This is a special purpose need, and we support the cost of this equipment. So it's not a sweeping shift that all servers would be purchased through us. It's more a cooperative approach to inform not only this body and the governor's office as they review budgets, but directors as well when they get requests from their staff to look and see how this might be better handled.
Follow up.
So, Mr. Waters, would we have an actual, in that budget, in that section where they talk about software or hardware, will there be a line from your agency that would say this is needed or not needed? It would be one question. The other question would be they want $842. We can do it for $692. Will that be stated as such?
Madam Chair, Senator, yes, it will. Our recommendations will say where we have a more affordable option.
Other questions? Go ahead, Mr. Co-Chairman.
Regarding the discussion that we would lose $4 million for the transition, is that been resolved? Are we not going to lose the federal dollars, or is there a component that we will lose?
Madam Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, the funding related to the federal recovery we will not lose. That has been resolved. I can defer to the folks that had contact with our federal counterparts that will allow us to have that recovery if you'd like.
Need to do anything from a budgetary standpoint, or does it just sort itself out?
Mr. Jones?
Madam Chairman, Mr. Chairman, we have had contact at the federal level with respect to the incorporation of recovery of these funds immediately in the cost allocation process. The folks at the federal level are favorably disposed towards that. We have written confirmation from them that they are willing to accept that recovery on an accelerated schedule. There is going to be a governor's letter specifically modifying the recommendation associated with other funds and federal funds contained in agency budgets and those reductions. That letter will address a recommendation or a modified recommendation to, instead of reducing those allocations in the budgets, moving them from the 400 series to the 300 series to cost allocation. And we have already prepared, the budget office has prepared specific attachments to that letter that list all of the specific locations in all of the agency budgets associated with that change of recommendation.
I think you've talked a little bit, but with all these changes, the facilities that you have at A&I are suitable to accommodate all these changes and to meet the needs of the your agency?
Mr. Waters.
Madam Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, it is sufficient at this time. We've had some discussions with Director Boswell about perhaps requesting some renovation in the auditorium area and some other areas where we might be able to recover some space over a period of time. And we will be looking at just some power enhancements, cooling and UPS enhancements in our Emerson building. But, yes, it is consistent with our ability to move forward.
Chairman, on a different note, I know you've been in contact with the chairs of the Education Committee with respect to assuming some functions with the accountability committee's work. Can you tell us a little bit about what your discussions are and what they're proposing to have you do?
Mr. Waters.
Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, I hopefully learning to be a good leader is knowing when to step out of the way. Fortunately, when I brought on the deputy CIO, she came from WDE and is actually the architect for the Weiss and several of the other systems or related data systems, so I will defer to her.
Ms. Bickle.
Madam Chair, I'm not clear on what you're asking, but some of the work that we've been doing with LSO right now is looking at how to accommodate the statewide longitudinal data system and ensure that that continues through, as well as put in a couple protection pieces for the educator credentialing system that came forth last session. Additionally, the state accountability statute that they've worked on last week, that's part of that priority three that's in that 205 budget 4702 that's coming out of education to continue the maintenance of the student growth model and the student trajectory system, I call it the early warning system, to look at risk students who are not performing. I don't know if that answers your question, but.
Have you taken a look at the Section 300 that's being circulated by our offices? And I think there's proposed to be more resources funneled through you. You tell a little bit about how you tend to meet those responsibilities if that section is adopted.
Madam Chair, yes, I have looked at the Section 300 today, actually, and we're comfortable moving forward with the items that are in there. There is it addresses hiring a education coordinator, IT coordinator, to ensure that UW and the community colleges, their concerns are addressed in the statewide longitudinal data system. There is also the piece on the educator credentialing system to build that solution out for PTSB, which would include working with UW, the community colleges, and K-12 and WDE. And within that language, there is two positions to continue that expertise that has started over the last year, as well as to add on to the storage component, because that system will take all of the hard copy documentation that PTSB receives in and make it electronic. So there's a huge storage component to that.
You have the space for the other any personnel that's going to be required for that?
Madam Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, yes, we do.
Senator Meyer.
Maybe this goes in a little bit to the line of questioning that Senator Von Flatern had, but I want to get a little more detail on, I guess, what in our budget we always have, we checked with the OCIO, and they said it's a go or go ahead, and I'm just wondering what that actually entails. And how deep of an understanding does your office have to the day-to-day needs and the needs of that agency and that request? Or is it mainly talking about capacities of and software capabilities?
Mr. Waters?
Madam Chair, Senator, when we get those requests to review technology purchases and the contracts related to software agreements, we go in and we look at the level of hardware required to meet the type of data needs they're expressing. We do have a business case process for purchases over $200,000 where they have to do a very detailed documentation as to why they are requesting this. And the way the oversight is structured, the ITCC body, which is our technology oversight group or assistance group, goes in and reviews those business case requests and looks at them from the perspective of other IT expertise throughout the state. So we get not only from our folks within house, but also the other IT implementers that are doing the similar solution. Perhaps it's a health request, and it can be reviewed by folks from DFS and folks from DOT. Next, it goes through our IT policy council, which is staffed with directors with someone from the governor's office and with key positions throughout the IT infrastructure in the state, and they do the same thing. And they do questions back to the agency asking, why did you ask for this level of hardware? This appears inconsistent with other requests. Can you explain it? So there is a very complex process that goes through and reviews those. Then it comes to my office, and I have a review. We've had some good success with it. When we came on board, I wasn't certain how well it was working. I found out that there were agencies that were actually hiring folks to come in just to write the business case. So on a $200,000 purchase, they were spending $25,000 to consult to have the business case written. So we're going back and looking at how it's structured and trying to ensure that it is not onerous but still informative. I don't know that we've hit the mark yet, but we're getting closer to it. We've had very positive reaction in the last couple of months to how we're doing the business case. In a couple of examples, I've assigned staff from my office to work with the agency and to take their subject matter expertise, combine it with our business case inquiries in the past, what we know that are going to be questions, and bring something to the table that's already been pretty heavily vetted. So I think it is working well, but it's definitely an area where there's room for improvement.
A little follow-up, Madam Chairman. If you know, I think a lot of state government is basically just people sitting down at word processors and doing input. You know, they're inputting salary, they're inputting some data, they're, you know, whatever it is, it's just input. Is that a correct characterization of a lot of the duties that's IT based? Or,
Madam Chair, Senator, it's an excellent observation. I think that's a high percentage of state operation. It leads me to maybe an opportunity to talk about what we're trying to do for the government cloud solution. I see these devices migrating to a situation where you don't need even a $900 computer sitting next to the desktop for so many state employees in the next two-year window. We're on a beta test. I'm under a non-disclosure agreement right now. I can't go public with it, but we're beta testing devices that would allow us to replace that type of structure and move to something that was a fraction of that type of cost for the state, and it was always upgraded. So the day the employee came into work, this little box would sit and it would make everything function, work back to our data centers and leverage the equipment that we have there. And the moment that they turn that machine on, it has the latest version of everything. It's protected. The data's backed up. You'll see it reflected in great detail in our biannual technology plan when we reach the point that we're able to complete that. But an excellent observation. That is definitely where we're going.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
I'm assuming under your task also that you are working on all of the different contracts, maintenance of service, and all the various things to sustain the programs that people have acquired over the years.
Madam Chair, yes, we are, and we're trying to change how that MSA program and how those program managers have been functioning. In the past, those requests for software support have come in as a bulk item. So if they are requesting support that includes upgrade, there's a lump sum that comes in before you. And sometimes that's 20-25% of the cost of the software itself. And in many agencies, we've not had as detailed a change management environment. So someone's not in there looking at those improvements and ensuring that they are approved and that it's a realistic expenditure. Those costs have gotten out of hand. Some of the budget items that you've seen come before you have an OCIO request that there be pretty strict approval of that particular item and that funding not be cleared without change management review from our office. And that's to that end.
So they'll be flagged as they expire because obviously they're in a contract currently, and until that's up for renewal, we can't assess that.
Madam Chair, yes, but we can also look at the purchase or the upgrade requests that are in the existing contract, because they're typically in the contract through the AG's office is an approval process for those changes. But my office hasn't always been involved in it. And we have a few programming projects where I feel like there's been I'd sure like that button to be moved over here, and it gets moved, and an $80,000 bill shows up. So that's something we want to be on top of.
Okay, that's really good because we've had several requests actually through agencies with that being one of their expenditures is on those upgrades.
Yes, Madam Chair, and that area, that 900 series is ripe with some. It's a ripe environment for review.
Great, and we know you can do it. All right, other questions of Mr. Waters? Anything further you would like to address with us?
Madam Chair, originally when we were asked to come in, we were also asked to be prepared to speak to the bill, the proposed legislation.
Oh, right, okay.
I do have that with me. I don't know if there are any questions related to that, but I'm anxious to answer any if they come up.
We need a minute to collect ourselves. Let's see if we can... Mr. Waters, I think that we don't need to do that, but we would take suggestions or comments from you if you've reworked it or have anything that we should address when we do review the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And we did provide the potential statutory language Mr. Co-Chair requested related to total quality management, and you should have that document.
Okay. Do you know what that number was on that document?
Madam Chair, we sent it to – I don't know that they knew we were going to speak to it today, but –
Madam Chairman, I believe that was document number 074. It was that the letter dated December 28th? Yes.
Okay.
074.
074. Okay. Great. All right. I think, Mr. Waters, you're done. Thank you, Ms. Bickle.
I think we're done now. Brett, are you in contact with the governor's office to know how they're coming on their letter and whether it's going to be whether 1 o'clock is right or whether we should delay till 2 or?
Madam Chair, Mr. Chairman, during the break earlier this morning, I went downstairs to check on the status of that information, and the indication was that you would see those by noon today.
Everyone okay? We'll take a lunch, early lunch, and be back at noon.
1 o'clock, we start to work.
And in that process, we'll start to work up the budget, and Senator Nicholas will start us off with marking up the budget.
And we go one through, right?
Yes, we'll start right from the beginning. On that. Okay? Yeah, with number one. Senator Nicholas, number one.